He also thought that perhaps his hiring of Frog and Bonzo wasn't too bad a choice after all. As Tobias and the two men rode into the clearing, Emma and Zek came from the house. Tobias stopped his horse and said uncertainly, "Emma, this is Frog and Bonzo, my new drovers." "Howdy, ma'am," they said in unison, removing their hats. "This is my son, Zek." "Howdy, Zek, pleased to meet you." They all dismounted as Emma and Zek continued to stare at the gaunt strangers. Tobias watched their reaction closely. Zek said, "What kind of horses is them?"
"Just horses," Frog responded.
"They's worse than the one Papa bought at Fort Capron. Looks like they need some grass." Emma said, "Are you men hungry? I fixed a big pot of stew in case Tobias brought somebody back with him."
"They's always hungry," Tobias said. "Last night they ate everything but my saddlebag."
"From now on you best make stew in a wash tub instead of the cooking pot. Where's Skillet?" "In his cabin," Zek said. "He's putting in some shelves. I'll go and get him." Before Zek could move, Skillet came from the cabin. Frog took one look and exclaimed, "God almighty, where'd you get him? That's the biggest nigger I ever seen."
"His name's Skillet," Tobias said. "He's my right-hand man. You and Bonzo can bunk in with him tonight." "I ain't sleeping with no nigger," Bonzo said. Tobias's eyes flashed anger.
"If you ain't, then you can sleep in the woods with the snakes. And if you don't like his being here, you can get on them flea-bit nags and leave right now. You understand me?"
"Ain't no need to get riled up," Frog said quickly. "It's just that we ain't never bunked in with a nigger."
Tobias said, "Well, there's a lot of things I never done that when I finally done it, I found out it wasn't so bad after all. It might turn out to be the same with you."
"Pleased to meet you, Skillet,"
Frog said pleasantly, remembering what Emma said about Stu. "I'm Frog, and this here's Bonzo. He didn't mean no harm by what he said. It's just that he ain't too bright. We'll all get along fine."
"Sure we will," Skillet said, towering over both of them. "You ever seen a man pick up a grown bull and hold him off the ground by his tail?"
"Can't say as I have," Frog said, again eyeing Skillet's huge body.
"Now that we got all this settled, we can have some victuals," Tobias said. "And you ought to know that Skillet takes his meals at the table with us. You got any objections?"
"No, sir, we got no objections," Frog said.
Just then Nip and Tuck came running from the woods, yapping loudly. They bounded across the clearing and came straight for the two men. Frog and Bonzo reached Skillet's cabin just ahead of the dogs and scrambled to the roof. The dogs then ran around and around the cabin and tried to climb the wall.
"I knew it," Tobias shouted. "I just knew they'd do it. Call them off, Zek."
Zek whistled, and the dogs came to him. Frog and Bonzo peeked over the edge of the roof, and Frog said,
"Where'd you get them damn wolves?"
"They ain't wolves," Zek said. "They's dogs. Their names are Nip and Tuck. They ain't gonna hurt you. They just didn't know who you are."
"You better make an introduction before I come down off of here," Frog said. "They done scared the living hell out of me."
Skillet was watching it all, grinning. "They won't do it again," Tobias said. "Soon as they know you're part of the crew, they'll like you." Frog and Bonzo climbed down from the roof reluctantly, Frog muttering, "Damn giant nigger and a pack of wolves." Then they all went into the house and took tin plates from a shelf. Just before they went to bed that night, Tobias and Emma sat at the table alone talking. Emma said,
"Where'd you find those two, Tobias?"
"On the street in Kissimmee. But don't let their looks fool you. They're tough. I've done seen it. They'll be a big help to us."
"I'm not worried about that. It's the supplies. I've never seen men eat like them. They keep it up, we'll have to kill and cook every cow we got before we reach Punta Raza."
Tobias smiled. "It's just that they're empty right now and have been that way for a long time. They're bound to fill up soon."
"I hope so. I don't know how I could keep a cook fire going all day, every day during a drive."
Tobias then took the ribbon from his pocket and held it behind him. "I bought a little something for you in Kissimmee. It ain't much, but I thought you'd like it." When they handed it to her, she said,
"It's real purty, Tobias. Real purty. And I thank you. But I won't wear it myself. I'll put it away. Pink is for a baby girl. I'll save it."
Tobias felt his face flush. He reached out and touched her, and then he said, "You'll use it someday, Emma. Now that I got some help, things are going to change for us." Chapter 16. The line of cattle stretched out over a quarter mile, moving slowly, the men and dogs flanking the sides, the wagon in the rear. Frog told Tobias he had never been to Punta Raza, but knew of men who had, and that they should go south to Fort Basinger, where there was a ferry to take the wagon across the Kissimmee River. From that point on, it was unknown territory. When they reached the fort, Tobias was charged $2 to load the wagon on a small wooden barge that was pulled across the river by ropes. The cattle, horses, and men swam, and it reminded Tobias of the time he stood on the bank of the St. Mary's and watched the cows cross the water in a long black line of bobbing horns. Only this time none were lost, and there was no crowd of hungry spectators watching, hoping for a drowned cow to wash ashore. They were 2 days past the river when a rider came across the plain and to the wagon. Tobias saw him speak briefly to Emma, then he rode back to meet him. The man said, "Name's Sam Lowry. Are you McIvey?" He had seen the McIvey Cattle Company sign on the side of the wagon. "Tobias McIvey, where are you headed?" "Punta Raza." The man shifted in his saddle. "You want to buy some cows?" "What you mean?" Tobias responded, not expecting such a question. "I got a little spread a couple of miles north of here. I seen you coming. I've farmed mostly, but I got 65 cows. Ain't no way I can get them to market by myself. So I'll sell them to you for $3 each. You can put them in with your herd." Tobias calculated in his mind what they were said to be worth in Punta Raza. If the market was as Thompson indicated, there would be a profit of $9 per cow. He said, "I don't have that much money on me. Tell you what I'll do, though. I'll take them and pay you on the way back." "Well, I don't know about that. I wanted cash. How do I know you'll come back by here and pay me?" "You've got the word of Tobias McIvey," Tobias said firmly. "I've never broken my word to no man, and I'm not going to do it for 65 cows. When we come back, I'll pay you. For sure they ain't doing me any good just chewing grass. You've got the look of an honest man, and your missus has too. I'll take a chance with you and do it. You want to sign some kind of a paper?" "Don't need no paper unless you want it. You got my word. And next time we come through with the herd, I'll pay you cash for whatever you got. I'll make a stop every time at your place."
"Sounds good enough. But we ought to at least shake on it."
Tobias clasped the man's hand. "It's did." Frog and Bonzo rode to the homestead with Lowry and drove his cows back to the herd. This pushed the number past 800. That night after supper, Tobias was sitting in the wagon with Emma, waiting his turn for second watch. She said, "Next time we make a drive, we better bring a whole barrel of flour, or maybe a wagon load. Frog and Bonzo ate 12 biscuits each. They eat more than Skillet, and look how big he is." "Don't seem right for a man to eat that much and stay thin as a snake. But look at me, I ain't much better. Maybe some men don't get fat no matter what they eat."
"Zek's going to be the same way. He keeps getting taller all the time, but he don't have no meat on his bones. Seems I'm the only one who puts on flesh."
"You're just right," Tobias smiled, patting her shoulder. "Don't no man want to sleep with a snake. I'll take you over any skinny woman I ever seen."
"Oh, Tobias, be serious," she said, smiling too.
Tobias then said, "You know, Emma, I've been thinking about the cows we got from Lowry. They must be men scattered all over the place with small herds and no way to get them to market. We get enough cash money. I could ride ahead of the drive and buy cows for $3 each. What we got here now ain't nothing to what we could have. We could end a drive with thousands of cows and not even have to go to the trouble of catching them."
"That's true," Emma agreed. "But when you just give your word for payment like you did today, what will you do if we lose this herd like we did once before? How will you pay anyone?"
"That ain't likely. We're bound to get through with some of them. We got the men to do it, but if we make Punta Raza with only 65 cows, they belong to Lowry. I gave my word."
"Yes, you did. And I know by now how a McIvey thinks." She took his hand and pressed it against her bosom. "If I were Lowry, I would trust you.
Tobias smiled again. It's worth thinking on, buying cows along the way. But don't do what you're doing with my hand, Emma. You're getting my furnace heated up, and I got to go and watch in a few minutes.
Tobias,
Emma giggled, snatching her hand away.
I swan, sometimes I don't know what to make of you. We lie together in a bed in the house, and you go sound asleep, snoring. Then we get out here in the wilderness, and you go to acting foolish like you did 10 years ago.
Like I told you, Emma, you ain't no snake. Man got a fine, fleshy woman like you, he can't tell the difference between a bed and a wagon floor.
Tobias, she said again, you stop that.
Then she took his hand and pressed it again. You go on now and stand your watch like you're supposed to.
If I'm asleep when you get back, you can wake me.
I will, Tobias said, getting down from the wagon. Lordy, Emma, I surely will. For 3 days, they moved over a marsh flat just to the south of a dense swamp. The grass here was rich and bountiful, and Tobias thought it would be a good place to bring cows for summer grazing. It was just before midnight on the third day when Tobias was awakened by the sound of a whip cracking 3 times, a signal of danger. He dressed hurriedly, jumped from the wagon, and saddled his horse. Skillet and Zek heard it too, and were already mounted. Frog and Bonzo were with the herd. The cracking came again, and Skillet said, "Whatever it is, they must figure they need help bad. They keep popping them whips, they'll spook the cows for sure." There was a full moon flooding the marsh, and the herd was easily visible a quarter mile away. As they rode forward, they could hear bellowing and the dull thump of hooves striking the ground. Zek said, "You want me to go back and untie the dogs, Papa?" "Not yet. Let's see what the trouble is first." They rode to the right of the herd and found Frog. He said, "I'm sure glad you got here this quick. We couldn't hold the cows in much longer without help." "What's happening?" Tobias asked, puzzled. "I don't see anything to stir them up." "You will. Look over yonder to the edge of the swamp." Tobias shifted in his saddle and looked to the north. Then he said, "Oh, Lord, wolves, a whole passel of them, just like I seen on the Confederate cattle drive." Dark forms darted everywhere in the moonlight, running forward, turning back to the woods, coming forward again, each time getting closer to the herd. "I don't know how to handle something like this," Frog said. "You'll have to tell me what you want me to do." "Even if they don't attack, they'll stampede the herd," Tobias said. "We got to keep them back. Frog, you and Bonzo keep circling the herd. Zek, you and Skillet, go back to the wagon and turn the dogs loose. Then bring all the firewood we got back here. Me and Skillet will use torches, and Zek, you go to the herd and help out there. If the cows break, get out of the way and let them go. We'll round them up in the morning. Just don't get in the way, and hurry now." Tobias's horse danced nervously as he waited for Zek and Skillet to return. When one wolf rushed forward, he unfurled his whip and charged it, slashing at the darting form again and again, feeling cowhide touch flesh as the wolf howled in pain and turned back. The horse bucked and kicked, terrorized by the wolf smell, almost throwing him from the saddle. Nip and Tuck streaked through the yellow grass, barking and snarling, two gray forms moving so fast that Tobias lost track of them. They rushed right through the wolves, then they came back and positioned themselves halfway between the woods and the herd, apparently fearless of what stalked in front of them. Skillet rode up with a burlap sack full of pine knots. He said, "I didn't mean to be so long, but I built a fire by the wagon. Mrs. Emma is all fretted up, and I didn't want to leave her in the dark." "That's good," Tobias said, dismounting. "You done right. Tie the horses to a bush while I light the torches. We best stay on foot with the fire. We can move around better this way." Tobias and Skillet then ran constantly, moving with the wolves, thrusting fire forward when a dark form came close, smelling singed hair and running again. The sound of whips blended with bellowing as the cows charged in one direction and were turned back, then stomped their hooves and charged again, crashing into each other. One wolf broke into the outside circle of the herd, and a shrill, almost human scream overwhelmed all other sound as a calf hit the ground and struggled frantically to get away. Nip and Tuck were on the wolf's back instantly, snarling, teeth snapping, hair flying, biting chunks from the wolf and jumping back, then rushing in again to send the wolf sprawling across the ground. Some of the cows broke away from the battle site and ran, and no amount of men or whips could stop them. Tobias glanced at them briefly as they thundered away and disappeared in the direction of the swamp. A death cry came from the wolf as the dogs ripped its throat open. It stumbled back toward the woods, leaving a trail of hot blood, falling and then scrambling forward, howling again as its life rapidly poured out onto the ground. The mournful sound seemed to frighten the other wolves. For a few minutes they moved back and forth among themselves, bewildered and undecided. Then they ran swiftly to the edge of the woods and disappeared. Tobias and Skillet put out their torches, mounted and rode to the herd. Frog came to them and said, "About 30 broke out, Mr. McIvey. We couldn't stop them. It was when that wolf got in there. I know, I seen it. We're just lucky it wasn't more than that. We'll find them in the morning. All of us need to stay out here the rest of the night in case the wolves come back. Where's Zek?" "Over to the right," Frog said. "He had that little hoss going like a jackrabbit, and I sure wouldn't want him to turn that whip on me the way he was using it on them wolves." "Go and tell him to stay with his mama till the rest of us come in. She's probably up in the top of a tree by now. Tell him to hurry on into the wagon." Once more during the night, the cattle tried to break but were turned back, and when daylight came, they started grazing as peacefully as if nothing had happened. Tobias noticed one calf with a cut across its side, but it was not a serious injury. He figured it was the one the wolf knocked down. Skillet came up to him and said, "How many of us you want to keep staying here?" "Tell everybody to go back to the wagon. The cows are calm now, and we all need some food and rest." Emma had biscuits and beef waiting when they rode in. She also dipped into their meager supply of coffee, and the aroma made the men jump from their horses and grab tin cups from the wagon. Frog took a deep drink and said, "Zek, I ain't going to say nothing more but good about them dogs of yours. When that wolf got in there, if it hadn't been for the dogs, them cows would have been scattered over Georgia by now. They really done a job on that wolf." Both Nip and Tuck's faces were covered with caked blood. Zek patted one of them and said, "They's good dogs, and they ain't scared of nothing." Emma passed around a plate of hot biscuits. "I thought everybody was getting killed," she said. "I've never heard so many different sounds at one time."
"It was a ruckus, all right," Tobias said. "I just hope it don't happen again. Maybe we've seen the last of them."
Zek said, "Papa, if the wolves come back, why don't we just shoot them?
That'd scare the cows as bad as the wolves."
He yawned, and then he said, "Frog, you and Bonzo stay here and get some sleep. You're probably shucked out since you haven't been to bed all night. Me and Zek and Skillet will look for the cows that ran off."
"We'll stay, but I'll keep one eye open. If anything happens, we'll go out to the herd real fast."
As soon as the coffee was gone, Tobias, Zek, and Skillet mounted up and rode to the north side of the herd. Tobias said, "The last time I seen them, they were heading straight for the swamp, about a quarter mile west of the wolves. Let's go down that way and see if we can pick up their tracks." The ground close to the line of cypress trees was soft, and they easily found the trail of hoofprints. When they entered the woods, they could see ferns that had been stomped flat by the cows. Tobias said, "I hope they didn't go far. If they did, we'll never get them out of there." Bald cypress trees towered over 100 feet into the sky and were surrounded by thick clumps of knees, and the ground was covered solidly with lush ferns and beds of velvet moss. There was an eerie quietness about the place. No barking of squirrels and no flapping of wings. The ground took a sudden downward slant that led into a cup-shaped slough, and here the hoof marks went down a foot into black muck. Tobias stopped his horse and said, "Lord have mercy, just look at that." 40 yards ahead of them, cow horns were sticking out of the ground, nothing but horns, and not even the bare tip of a head could be seen.
"They done buried themselves alive in that sinkhole," Skillet said, his eyes wide. "Even the buzzards can't get at them. They ain't nothing left but worm bait."
Zek started backing Ishmael.
"I don't want to look, Papa. Let's leave. I don't want to see it."
"I don't either. That ain't a fit way for even an animal to die. I don't want to see this place again."
For another week, they stayed on open prairie, skirting just to the south of the line of trees that marked swampland. Then one day the trees appeared on the horizon ahead of them as well as to the north. and as they moved forward, a wall of tall cypress blocked their view to the south. For 2 more days they moved westward, letting the cows graze and set their own pace. And each day the corridor between the north and south trees became narrower, and the wall ahead of them loomed closer. Tobias rode from the wagon and over to Skillet on the herd's right flank. "I don't like the looks of this," he said. "Seems like we're heading into some kind of a dead-end canyon, right into a swamp. I hope there's a way through it. If there ain't, we've got 3 or 4 days of backtracking to do."
"Don't look good, and we sure ought not push him into a swamp after what we've seen back of the other one."
By late afternoon, the wall in front of them was only a half mile away, and the north and south corridor had narrowed to less than a mile. Heat coming from the ground was stifling, and the air was so thin the horses puffed as they walked. Tobias told the men to stop the herd and circle them until they were settled, then come back to the wagon for supper. He hoped there were no bears or wolves here, for if the herd spooked for any reason, there was nowhere for them to run and seek safety. Emma cooked the last of the smoked beef and also baked sweet potatoes. As the men ate silently, she said to Tobias,
"Tomorrow you've got to either shoot a deer or kill one of the cows. There's no meat left, and the flour's almost gone, too. We'll have to make Kunti to get us through."
"I'll see to it as soon as I can," Tobias said. "What worries me more than victuals is this fix we're in. In the morning I'll scout ahead and see if there's a way out of here without turning back."
"This place spooks me," Frog said. "I got a feeling somebody's watching us. I don't know how to explain it, but something ain't right. Times like this, it pays to be a dumbo like Bonzo."
Bonzo either didn't hear the remark or ignored it. He stuffed a burned potato peeling into his mouth and chomped, paying no heed to the conversation.
"I got the same feeling," Skillet said. "Black man says someone walking on your grave. It's strong enough to make my flesh crawl."
"You men," Emma exclaimed, dipping herself a plate of stew, "you're seeing ghosts everywhere. All you're doing is remembering the wolves, and we may never see those wolves again. And when it comes down to the truth, all you really worry about is your stomachs, whether or not some woman can fill them up."
"There's fact in that," Frog said. "The only thing that counts in life is a woman's cooking pot. Is yours empty now, Miss Emma?"
"Almost," Emma said, taking his plate. "There's a little left, but you just proved what I said."
Zek was listening, but he seldom broke into a conversation when adults were talking, but now he spoke up.
"Ishmael feels it too, Papa. I can put my hand on his neck and feel him tremble. He knowed the wolves were coming before we seen them, before the cows got riled up. He sees things nobody else can see, and he has a way of letting me know. He ain't happy here, Papa. He says we ought not be here. He's an Indian pony, and he has a way of knowing things we don't know."
Everyone became silent for a moment, wondering if this were truth or fantasy coming from a small boy who talked as if he really believed it. Then Tobias said, "Ishmael is a horse, Zek, and that's all. He's just a horse like all the others. It's time we stop this gibberish and go on watch. Me and you will go first. That way, if Ishmael has something special to say, maybe I can hear it too."
"You don't have to believe it," Zek said. "I was just trying to tell you Ishmael ain't happy here. I can tell when he is and when he ain't."
Tobias got up from the fire. "Let's go, before you get me too spooked to ride watch. Tomorrow morning we'll leave this place one way or another." There was no moon during the first of the watch, and it was impossible to distinguish cows from trees. Tobias and Zek rode only by sound, hearing the swish of a tail or the thump of a hoof circling what they hoped was the herd. The fire back at the wagon was their only beacon, and without it they would have had no sense of direction at all. Tobias sat still in the saddle for a moment, staring blindly into the darkness, thinking what a catastrophe it would be if danger struck the herd in such a sea of ink. If the cows ran, there would be no way of knowing which direction they took. And with swamp on 3 sides of them, they would have to hunt for the cows one at a time, just as he and Zek had once hunted them in the swamp beyond the hammock. He moved the horse forward again, feeling his way, not wanting to bump into a cow and frighten it. Then he stopped and listened, hearing a faint
tinkling sound, like bells. The sound went away, and then it came again, this time closer. The next time he heard it, it seemed to be moving back into the swamp. Zek rode up to him, moving swiftly, the small horse, sure-footed in the darkness. "Did you hear something, Papa?" he asked, holding the reins tight to stop the horse's dancing. "I thought I did. But it could have been the wind in the trees. Did you?" "It sounded like bells. I heard it 2 or 3 times, and then it went away." "That's what I heard, too. Something tinkling. It's for sure nobody's belled a milk cow and turned it loose out here. It must have been something in the trees. Whatever it was, I haven't heard it again." Just before the watch ended, the moon came from behind a cloud bank, casting a yellow glow over the herd and the trees. Although he had felt no movement, Tobias discovered that the cows were 1/4 mile closer to the edge of the swamp. He wanted to move them back again, but did not do so for fear of spooking them. When he got back to the wagon after being relieved, Emma stirred and said, "Well, did you see any buggers out there tonight?" She said it in jest, not really expecting an answer. "No, but I swear for God, Emma, I heard bells. Zek heard it too, and I told him it was just the wind in the trees. But it wasn't. It was bells."
"Bells?"
"It was a tinkling sound at first. It came close to the herd once, and then it went away. Neither one of us didn't hear it no more."
"Why would anyone be out here in the wilderness with bells?"
"I don't know. But come sunup, I aim to find out." Tobias left before breakfast the next morning. Zek wanted to come with him, but he said no, he would do this alone. If there was a way through the swamp, he would find it and come back as soon as possible. He approached the line of cypress trees reluctantly, walking the horse slowly, looking back at the grazing herd and at the wagon beyond. It seemed to him that all this land they had moved over for 3 days was a funnel, directing them to this one impassable spot. His instinct was to turn back now, to backtrack the herd and leave this place as hurriedly as possible. But he walked the horse straight into the woods. The land looked the same as where the cows buried themselves, towering bald cypress, thick clumps of lush ferns, fallen rotten limbs covered with moss, palmetto clumps, and cocoa plum bushes. There were also pools of stagnant water covered with slime, cut in places by moccasin trails. Tobias followed a small ridge of higher ground, moving gingerly, remembering what happened to the cows that ran into the sinkhole muck. He already knew there was no way to move the cattle through here, but he did not turn back. He was a mile into the swamp when he heard it, the bells. The one thing he had come looking for, not a passage for the herd, but for the strange sound that had come out of the night. It was off to the right, no more than 100 yards distant, tinkling, moving, and then stopping, then moving again. He sat in the saddle, mesmerized, not thinking of the herd or of Emma or Zek or anything but the bells, somehow knowing that if he sat still, it would come to him. The horse whinnied and backed away a few steps as the sound grew louder. Then it came past the last clump of palmetto and stood before him. The man was beyond age, so old that his skin was cracked like alligator hide. He was almost 7 feet tall, and his hair was tied on top of his head with bands of reeds, making him seem even taller. He wore only a girdle of silver-colored balls and small brass bells, and around his neck there were 6 strings of shells. His wrists were covered with bracelets of fish teeth, and his entire body was stained red. Tobias stared, unbelieving at first, and then believing,
but feeling no fear. He knew this was not an apparition or a hallucination, but a man, a flesh-and-blood man beneath all those strange trappings. There was a calmness about him that dissipated fear, making Tobias calm, too. An overwhelming calmness that flooded his body and caused him to slump forward in the saddle. For several moments, no word was spoken. And then the old man said,
"I am a Tomuquan, the last of my people. I am the keeper of the graves. Soon I will join the others. We came here a long time ago to hide from the Spanish soldiers. I am the only one left, and I have lived beyond my time."
Tobias said, "We didn't know. We're lost and trying to find a passage for the herd."
"Do not bring your cows in here,"
the old man cautioned.
"In here, there is only death. If you come in here, you will never return. Go back the way you came. This swamp is a burial ground for all who enter. My people have known this to be true."
"Is there no other way? We're trying to reach the sea to the west. If we turn back, it means 3 or 4 days of traveling."
"It is best that you travel those days. Only death awaits you if you enter. Do not go into the south swamp either. Go all the way back and around the swamp. It is the only way."
Without speaking further, the old man turned and walked away. Tobias wondered if he had really seen this or not. But as he listened to the bells fading into the distance, he knew. Zek wrote to him swiftly as soon as he emerged from the woods. He asked anxiously, "Did you find it, Papa?"
"Find what?"
Tobias responded absently. "A way to get through."
"There is no way to get through. We'll have to turn the herd and go back. It's the only way."
"The bells, Papa. Did you find the bells?"
"It was the wind. Only the wind. Ride on ahead and tell the men to move the cows out of here right away. Hurry now."
Tobias sat still for several minutes, thinking of the old man who had been in there alone for such a long time. Then he put his horse into a trot and headed for the herd. For 2 days they turned back eastward, following the south line of trees, seeing the funnel gradually widen until the swamp on the north lay on the far horizon. Tobias was strangely silent, even at night around the supper fire. They killed one cow and dressed it, and the fresh beef satisfied all but Tobias, who seemed to be preoccupied with something besides food. He could not dismiss the strange Indian from his mind, and he wanted to get away as quickly as possible and never return. At dawn on the third morning, he rode into the edge of the swamp alone. The trees were not so thick here, and for a half mile the ground was solid. From this point forward there was water, and the trees became even thinner. He stared at what seemed to be an opening on the far side, then he turned and went back to the wagon. Everyone was at the breakfast fire except Bonzo, who was with the herd. Tobias took a strip of fried beef, ate a few bites, and threw the rest to Nip. He said, "I think the swamp is narrow here. There's water, but it don't look too bad. If we can push through here, it'll save us a couple more days of backtracking. Then we'll be away from this place."
"There's really no hurry, is there?" Emma asked. "The cows seem to be doing fine on the grass."
"I want to try it anyway. We'll cut out 6 cows. Me and Zek and Skillet will take them in there. If we make it with no trouble, Zek can wait on the other side while we come back and push the rest of the herd through."
"You want the dogs to come with us?"
Zek asked. "Maybe they ought to. They could be a big help in there, and the water don't look too deep for them."
"Are you sure about this?"
Skillet asked doubtfully, hoping Tobias would change his mind.
Don't seem to me it make no difference we get to Punta Raza one day or another, just so we get there.
It's worth a try. If we can't make it, we'll turn around, come back, and head east again.
You the boss, Skillet said resignedly, getting up and mounting his horse.
They cut 6 cows from the herd and entered the woods, and when they reached the point where water met solid ground, the cows hesitated and tried to turn back. Nip and Tuck bit at their rear legs, forcing them forward, and soon they were wading through a foot of water.
So far it's not too deep for the wagon, Tobias said. If it don't get no worse than this, we can make it easy.
Ishmael started to buck, and the splashing water caused herons to flap out of a cypress tree and squawk loudly. Tobias said, "Calm him down, Zek, before he scares the cows and makes them run."
Zek steadied the horse, and they moved forward again, churning up black mud as they rippled the calm surface.
Skillet said,
"I don't like this, Mr. Tobias. Something don't seem right about this place."
"We'll go a bit further. If it gets deeper, we'll turn back." The dogs were now having to jump to stay above the water level, and they were useless in herding the cows.
Suddenly, the lead cow plunged downward, went under, and came up bellowing. Then it seemed that dynamite was being set off beneath the surface. Violence came from everywhere, all at once, without warning, tails slashing and jaws popping. One cow was snatched under instantly. Then it came up fighting to break free, its head firmly locked in an alligator's mouth. It bellowed and went under again as blood bubbled to the surface and spread out in a widening circle.
"Gators!" Tobias shouted, clinging to the saddle as his horse reared up. "Turn back! Turn back!"
Nip was already swimming toward high ground, but Tuck went straight ahead, heading for the panic-stricken cows.
Zek kicked Ishmael in the flanks and plunged after the dog, the water now almost over the saddle. Tobias watched, frozen with fear, then he managed to shout frantically, "No, Zek, no!"
The small horse swam right into the death orgy, staining its hide with blood. Then Zek grabbed the dog and pulled it onto the saddle and turned back. Water exploded all around him as Ishmael churned desperately, gradually moving away. Skillet had already snatched Nip up and was galloping through the water. Tobias continued to watch, unable to move, as the black surface turned solid red. And it was only after Zek rushed by him that he wheeled his horse and followed. When they reached the edge of the woods, they stopped and put the dogs down. Tobias said weakly, "You could have got killed back there, Zek. You shouldn't ought to have done it. A dog ain't worth the chance you took."
"I wasn't going to let no gator eat Tuck, Papa. I knew Ishmael could do it. I could feel it."
"Lord, what I could have caused." Tobias sighed, putting his hand on Zek's shoulder. "It wasn't your fault," Skillet said quickly, concerned by the stricken look on Tobias's face. "Wasn't no way to know that place is a gator den."
"I knew. I knew before we went in there. He warned me, and I didn't pay heed. He told me there is only death in there. And I went anyway."
"You ain't making sense, Mr. Tobias," Skillet said. "Who warned you?"
"Back there in the swamp. He said not to enter, to go around."
"You want to go to the wagon and take a rest? Maybe we ought to stop here for a day or two."
"No, get the herd started. We'll go east as far as we have to and go around the rest of the swamp. I should have listened."
"We'll move on then," Skillet said, still looking at Tobias strangely. "But don't blame yourself for anything. At least we know not to come this way again. It was worth something. Best we lose a few cows and a whole herd."
"Next time we'll know," Tobias agreed. Then he watched the two dogs as they streaked through the grass toward the herd, Zek and Ishmael close behind them. When they rounded the tip of the swamp and turned westward again, they came into open prairie land. The herd moved lazily, grazing in one spot until it was cleaned, then drifting on. Tobias gradually dismissed the Temuquan from his mind, and all of the men seemed to regain confidence after the experience of being boxed into the dead-end swamp. Tobias also made mental notes of the route they should take the next time. One morning they approached a lake with a dense hardwood hammock on the east side. Tobias was riding right flank, and he saw the rider come from the woods and head in his direction.
He left the herd and met him halfway. This man said directly, "I got a few cows to sell. Are you interested?" He was an older man, around 60, with solid white hair and a beard to match. Tobias responded, "Well, yes and no. I don't have money to pay cash. I picked up 65 a head from a man named Lowry back at the Kissimmee for $3 a head and promised to pay him on my way back. I could do the same for you. How many you got?" 110, and I ain't got no help to move them. What's your name?"
"Tobias McIvey."
"Wendell Likes. Pleased to meet you." Both men looked at each other as if sizing each other up, and then Likes said, "How do I know you'll come back and pay me?"
"Same way as Lowry. You got my word. And I've never broken it to no man. So far we've lost near on 40 cows, and Lowry will get paid for every one of his. What we lose is mine, and like I told Lowry, next trip through I'll take whatever you got and pay cash."
The man scratched his head for a moment, pondering a decision. "You coming straight back here after the drive?"
"Straight back. I live over on the east bank of the Kissimmee."
"Well, okay, it's a deal. Were you taking the herd, Tampa?"
"Nope, Punta Rasa. I've been told the price is better there."
"You're too far north for Punta Rasa. You need to cut south."
"You been there?"
"Several times, but not driving a herd. Is this your first trip there?"
"For a fact, and we done got lost on several occasions. Maybe you could give us directions."
"Well, best thing you can do is go due south till you hit the Caloosahatchee. It's the first river you'll come to. It goes into Punta Rasa, but you'll have to cross the river to get there. It's on the south bank, right at the gulf. There's a ferry about 4 miles north of there that can take your wagon across, but you'll have to swim the cows."
"Is there gators in the river?"
"Mister, there ain't no water in Florida without gators, unless you got a tub of it in your house, and one's liable to get in there, too, if you leave the door open. But I ain't heard of nobody losing cows to gators on the Caloosahatchee. It's pretty deep water, and gators lay up mostly in shallows."
"Just thought I'd ask."
Tobias unfurled his whip and cracked it 2 times. Then he saw Skillet and Zek ride away from the wagon and come toward him. He said, "They'll go with you and bring in your cows. Don't you want to count them first and sign a paper?"
"If you say you've got 110, that's good enough for me. You get paid for 110. And I don't need a paper if you don't."
"Fair enough. I hope we get to do business again."
Tobias turned his horse. Then he looked back and said, "Thanks rightly for the directions. I was beginning to believe there ain't no such place as Punta Rasa. I'll see you again soon, and we'll take good care of your cows."
4 days later, they reached the Caloosahatchee and then followed its bank until they found the ferry. It was late afternoon when the last cow staggered from the river, but they made the crossing without incident. Tobias could not believe they were within 4 miles of their destination. Although this close, Punta Rasa still seemed to him to be as distant as Babylon and just as unreachable. He also had a strong premonition that something bad would happen yet. A storm, a flood, wolves, alligators, something. Or Thompson's information about the Cuban market would be in error and there would be no buyers on hand who wanted the cattle. The long path to this point had been too lined with disappointment, disaster, and grief for him to feel premature joy. They moved the herd 1 mile down the river and then circled them for the night. Tobias would ride on alone the next morning and seek a buyer, then return and share the news with everyone, good or bad. At supper that night, everyone seemed strangely subdued, as if they too did not yet believe. Tobias had surmised that Frog and Bonzo would try to get advance pay and ride off to the village, leaving the rest of them alone to protect the herd. But they made no mention of this. Even Zek showed no boyish enthusiasm of reaching trail's end, and he spent an hour after dark quietly rubbing Ishmael's neck and talking to him. Tobias noticed all of this, thinking that perhaps they were all tired beyond realization, and it was just now hitting them, like hunters who pursue the prey through the woods relentlessly for an entire day, and after the kill is finally made, fall down exhausted. Whatever the reason, it was the quietest night the camp spent. They still posted the same guard as they had in the wilderness, and an hour before midnight, Tobias was still awake, awaiting his turn. He sat on the wagon seat as Emma aroused from a fitful sleep and came to him.
She sensed at supper he was restless, anxious for the night to pass and the dawn to come, that he would not lie down and rest either before his watch or when it ended. She sat beside him, silently, watching a full moon come over cypress trees lining the banks of the river. Spanish moss swayed from limbs like blobs of cotton and absorbed the moonbeams, changing the dull gray beards to glowing yellow. The cattle were visible in the distance, quiet now, standing deathly still, resembling not flesh and blood creatures hounded by predators but miniature statues on a kitchen shelf. The herd was all together now for the last time, a mass rather than individual fragments, and she thought of all those days and weeks and months Tobias and Zek and Skillet struggled to assemble what stood on this small plot of ground and would soon be no more. They had survived only to come to an end, and the cycle would begin anew when they returned to the homestead. She finally said, "Don't be too disappointed if this doesn't turn out right, Tobias. It's not the end of everything." For a moment he made no answer, and then he said, "I was going to say the same thing to you, and ask you not to be disappointed. You beat me to it."
"I would be disappointed only for you and Zek. You've worked too hard to fail now. I know what it means to you."
"I'm not sure I know myself what it means," he said, putting his hand on hers. "All those times me and Zek chased some scrawny cow through the woods and didn't catch it, it wasn't the money. I want the money now for you and Zek. For me, I guess I've just been trying to prove something to myself. All my life, when I tried to do something worth anything, I never made it. Not here or back in Georgia. It was the same with my daddy. And he finally gave up and quit trying. When he did, it killed my mama just as sure as those gators killed the cows back in the swamp. And it was just as awful to see. Then it got daddy, too. We almost made it in the scrub, me and you and Zek. Then somebody comes along and burns it all for no reason. Every time I try, it seems somebody burns it or floods it or kills it. Maybe this time the Lord won't throw a roadblock in front of me. But if he does, I'll just stumble over it and try again. I'm not ready to give up yet. And I ain't going to quit, no matter what happens tomorrow morning." She leaned over and put her head on his shoulder.
"I've known that all along, Tobias. And whatever happens, we'll work it out together. That's the way I want it to be."
"Emma," he said hesitantly, unsure of his words. Then he started again. "Emma, I'm not always a gentle man, and I know it. I guess it's because of the things I've seen growing up. I want to be, but I don't know how. You could have done better than me. A fine woman like you, and I always knowed that, too. I ain't much to look at, but someday I'm going to make you proud. And Zek, too. I'm not going to quit trying till I do."
She reached up and kissed him. "You're the most gentle man I've ever known. I'm proud now, and Zek is, too."
He suddenly jumped from the wagon. "There you go again," he said, smiling. "Doing the same thing you done to me that night out on the prairie, when I had to go on watch. I've got to relieve Skillet now. You best get some sleep. We've got a big day ahead of us tomorrow."
Chapter 17. Tobias passed several large holding pens and then turned down a rutted road leading to the waterfront. There were two stores, one containing a cafe and a post office, the other general merchandise. Between them was a saloon, and behind this a livery stable, feed store, and blacksmith shop were housed together in a barn-like structure. Across from one store, a two-story clapboard house offered rooms for rent. The whole area reeked of cow manure, and Tobias wondered how the people who lived and worked here could stand the constant odor. At the end of the street, a dock ran 100 feet out into the bay, and adjacent to the dock there was a cattle chute. A small shack on pilings was at the left of the dock, and at the end a side-wheel steamer belched smoke from its two stacks. Two more steamers lay at anchor further out in the bay. The village had a desolate look, almost forbidding, peppered with fierce-looking Spanish bayonet and clumps of salt-burned palmetto. Sea grapes covered large sand dunes to the right and left of the dock. Tobias had pictured it differently, the name Punta Rasa conjuring visions of something exotic, things he had never seen before, but except for the cattle dock and the more numerous buildings, it was no different from Kissimmee. He was more than mildly disappointed. Several men were sitting on the porch of one store, and Tobias rode up to them and dismounted. 2 1-gallon jugs of Cuban rum were on the floor in front of them. He said, "I'm looking for a cattle buyer. You know where I can find one?" "Down yonder," one of the men said, pointing. "The shack on the dock. You want to see Captain Hendry?" Tobias tied the horse to a hitching post and walked to the dock. He knocked on the closed door, and a voice came to him. "It ain't locked. Come on in." There were 3 men inside, 2 sitting on tall stools at shelves containing ledgers, the other in a rocking chair with his feet propped on a desk. The man in the rocker was dressed in black leather boots, brown canvas pants, and a blue chambray shirt. He wore a large straw hat with turkey feathers on one side. Tobias said, "Name's Tobias McIvey. I was told I could find a cattle buyer here." "You come to the right place," the man said, getting up from the rocker. He was a tall, slim man of about 50. "I'm Sam Hendry. Where's your herd?" 3 miles up the river. "How many you got?" "Can't say for sure. We lost some on the drive and ate a couple. I figure it to be around 850, maybe a few more than that." "They in good shape?" "Real good. We moved slow coming here and let them eat all they wanted. They ought to go over 500 pounds each." "That's the kind we need," Hendry said, showing interest. "Some men run them yellowhammers down here hell-bent for leather, like they was rabbits instead of cows. And the time they get here, they're not much more than skin and bones. Then we have to fatten them ourselves. If yours are in good shape, like you say, we'll pay $16 a head, if not 12 a stops." Tobias felt a faintness flush through him, causing his throat to turn dry. Even after hearing it, he still could not believe that the cows were actually worth cash money. To him, they were still just stubborn critters they had popped out of swamps and chased across prairies. He finally managed to croak, "Sounds fair to me. When you want to see them?"
"Drive the herd on down here and put them in one of the holding pens. We'll take a look and make a head count. We pay in Spanish gold doubloons worth $15 each. $525 to a sack. You better go to the store and buy a trunk to carry it in, unless you've got a big wooden box with you."
"Yes, sir, Mr. Hendry. I'll do that. And I'll go back right now and move the herd."
"Captain Hendry," the man corrected. "If I'm not here when you get done with it, I'll be in my office and back at the general store."
Tobias had an overwhelming urge to run, but he walked casually up the street to his horse. He moved slowly until out of sight of the men. Then he let out a whoop that could be heard back at the dock and put the old horse in a gallop. When he reached the wagon, he was breathless. He jumped from the panting horse and said in gasps, "We done it. We done it. $16 a head. Spanish gold." Skillet's eyes widened.
"Holy shit," he exclaimed loudly. Then he turned quickly to Emma and said, "Lordy, Mrs. Emma, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say that. It just come out."
"I almost said it myself," Emma replied. Then she turned to Tobias. "Calm yourself down a bit, and then tell us what happened."
"Captain Hendry, he's the buyer. He said if they're in good shape, he'll pay $16 each. If not, 12 is tops. You know how much money that is, Emma?"
"Not really. I'm not sure I can count that high."
"It's a bunch. I'm going to buy a steamer trunk down at the store just to haul it back to the hammock. But right now, we've got to move the herd. He said bring them to a holding pen so he can look and make a head count. Ride on out there, Skillet, and tell everybody to start moving the cows. I'll come on later with Emma. I'm going to tie the dogs in some bushes and leave them a pan of water. They'll follow us into town. Somebody's liable to take them for wolves and shoot them."
Skillet leaped on his horse and said, "We'll have them cows down there in no time at all, Mr. Tobias."
"No,"
Tobias exclaimed. "Walk 'em slow. Real slow. They need to keep every pound they got. Just take it easy." Tobias sat in a chair in front of the desk, watching Hendry make figures with a pencil. He scratched for a moment more. Then he looked up and said, "Well, McIvy, you've got 865 head, all in good shape. So the price is 16. That comes to $13,840. You want to count all of the money?"
"No, sir, Captain Hendry. That ain't necessary," Tobias replied, overwhelmed by the figures. "I trust you to do the right thing, but if you got one of them gold coins on you right now, I'd sure like to keep it separate. It's the first I ever earned."
Hendry took a doubloon from his pocket and handed it to Tobias. "You want the rest of the money now?"
"I'll buy a trunk first and then come back with the wagon. But I'd like to have 8 more coins now. We all need boots, and I want to treat everybody to a meal in the cafe. My boy's never been in a cafe."
"You've got them."
While Hendry counted out the coins, Tobias said, "Captain Hendry, I ain't never had this much money in all my life. I never thought I would. Will somebody here try to take it from me?"
"I figured that would cross your mind, especially since this is your first time in with a herd. Won't nobody here pay any more attention to that gold than they would biscuits? I've seen men come in with 6,000 head, then dump all those sacks of doubloons on the store porch and go in the saloon, just leaving it set there. If somebody took it, they couldn't put it on a horse. If they used a wagon, you could catch them in less than a mile. You got nothing to worry about here in Punta Rasa. Of course, I wouldn't go back out in the wilderness and flaunt it around. Somebody out there would take the challenge for sure."
Tobias then accepted the coins.
"I thank you for the advice. We'll be back in about an hour for the rest of the money."
He went outside and up the street to where the horses and the wagon were tied in front of the cafe. Zek was prancing Ishmael, and the others were sitting on the edge of the porch. Tobias said, "It'll be a while before we pick up the money. Let's go in the cafe and get something to eat." It was an hour before noon, and there were no other customers in the building. They all took chairs at a table covered with a red checkered oilcloth. The waiter, a short, fat man wearing a dirty apron, came to them and said,
"What'll it be, folks?"
Tobias said, "What you got?"
"Well, today we're serving country fried steak, pork chops, fried snapper, and fried chicken. Take your choice."
"What else goes with it?"
"Rice and gravy, black-eyed peas, turnips, corn bread and biscuits."
"Sounds good," Tobias said. "We'll take 6 fried chicken dinners, but cook us a whole chicken each. And all the rest of that stuff, plus a gallon of hot coffee. You got eggs, too?"
"Yeah, we got eggs,"
the waiter said, eyeing Tobias curiously. "Fry us 3 dozen on a side platter. Zek's never eaten an egg. Or chicken, either. What kind of pie you got?"
"Apple."
"We'll take 6. The waiter looked at the scratch pad.
"Now let me get this straight. 6 fried chicken dinners, a whole chicken each, 3 dozen eggs, 6 apple pies, and a gallon of coffee.
You sure that's all you want?"
"That ought to do for a start. If it don't, we'll let you know."
The waiter then pointed to Skillet. "When the food's done, he'll have to eat out back. We don't serve niggers in the dining room."
"What did you say?"
Tobias asked quickly.
"There's a table on the stoop outside the kitchen. He can eat there. We don't serve niggers in here."
"Excuse me a minute," Tobias said, getting up. "I left something in my saddlebag. I'll be right back."
Emma said, "Tobias, don't you—"
"I said I'd be right back," he snapped. Frog also got up.
"I need to check my saddlebag, too. I'll go with Mr. McIvy."
They both returned, carrying military pistols. Tobias sat down and placed his pistol on the table. Skillet said to him, "Mr. Tobias, this ain't worth trouble. I'd as soon go out to the stoop. It don't make no difference to me. The chicken will taste just as good out there as in here."
"Sit still," Tobias said. "Ain't no member of the McIvy clan going to eat on a back porch, not here or anywhere. If one of us gets kicked out, we all go, and that's a fact."
The waiter came back from the kitchen and announced, "Mr. Lassiter is the cook and the owner. He says he ain't going to—" Tobias and Frog cocked the pistols, and then Tobias said, "You go and tell Mr. whoever he is that he's about to serve his first nigger in here. If he don't, we'll all leave, and if we do, you're going to have some real bad trouble with the roof next time it rains."
"Very well,"
he said distastefully, eyeing the pistols. In a moment he returned.
"Mr. Lassiter says he can bend the rule this time, but he don't understand why anyone would make such a fuss over a nigger. He says don't shoot no damn holes in the roof, and he hopes you enjoy the chicken."
"We will," Tobias said, "if it ever gets here."
Frog uncocked the pistol.
He just learned that some things you do for the first time ain't nearly so bad as you thought it'd be. Ain't that right, Mr. McIvey?
Tobias smiled.
If you say so, Frog.
And I tell you what I'm going to do after I pay you and Bonzo the wages I promised. I'm going to give each one of you $100 bonus. How would that suit you?
Just fine, Frog answered, surprised and pleased. That much money will probably burn a hole in my pockets, but it's real fine. We thank you, don't we, Bonzo?
He kicked Bonzo under the table.
That's real fine.
Bonzo echoed quickly.
We didn't expect that much. We're obliged to you.
You said that real good, Bonzo, Frog said. I'm right proud of you.
Just then the waiter started bringing steaming platters and bowls to the table. Zek helped himself to a chicken breast and two fried eggs. He gulped them down and said,
"That's real good, Papa. A heap better than Coon. How come we don't get us some chickens? I'd take care of them."
"We will some day, but it might be hard to keep them in the hammock. Foxes and panthers eat chickens, and wolves do too. It's like inviting them to supper, and coons steal eggs. We'd have to watch over them real careful."
"Nip and Tuck would help me do that. It's real good, Papa. The best I've ever had."
"Wait till you get to the apple pie," Emma said, smiling. "You'll like that, too. I know how to make pies, but it's hard to do in a frying pan. If we ever get another Dutch oven or a cook stove, I'll bake your pie every day, and cookies, too."
Frog and Bonzo heard none of it. Their plates were piled with bones, and the side dishes were empty. Tobias said, "I'll order more rice and peas and turnips, and another pone of cornbread. Maybe we'll need more chicken, too, before we're done."
Skillet smacked his lips. "Mr. Tobias, this worth all them floods and wolves and gators, too. You keep the victuals coming, we might be here for a week."
"We can't stay that long," Tobias said, "'cause I got to go to the store and buy a trunk. I told Captain Hendry we'd be back for the money in an hour or so, but we might eat every chicken in Punta Rasa before we head back to the hammock." He then took the gold doubloon from his pocket and handed it to Zek. "This is the first coin Captain Hendry gave me. I want you to have it, Zek, and keep it. If you don't ever spend it, you'll never be flat-out broke like I always been." Zek turned the coin over in his hand, looking at the engravings.
"It's real pretty, Papa.
But if you don't mind, I'd rather spend it and buy some apples for Ishmael. I promised him."
"I'll buy the apples. You keep the coin. I don't want you to spend it now or ever."
Zek put the doubloon in his pocket.
"I'll keep it, Papa. I promise. When we get back to the hammock, I'll put it away. Can I have some more chicken now, and some more biscuits and gravy, too?"
"Eat all you want," Emma said, piling his plate. "Maybe it'll put meat on those bones. You're beginning to look just like your daddy."
"Speaking of bones," Tobias said, "save all them chicken bones for Nip and Tuck. And I'll have the waiter sack up a whole fried chicken for each of them. They've earned it too much as anyone. We'll feed them good this afternoon."
The waiter came from the kitchen with another platter.
"Mr. Lassiter sent you some snapper. He cooks real good fish, and he thought you might like some. Where you folks eats, he wants all of you to come back every time you brings in a herd."
He put the platter down, motioned at Skillet, and said sheepishly, "Mr. Lassiter says him, too."
"We'll just do that," Tobias said. "You got a good cafe. Tell Mr. Lassiter this is right neighborly of him. Right neighborly."
The four men placed the steamer trunk in the wagon. Tobias opened one sack and counted out coins to Frog and Bonzo. Skillet watched and said nothing as no money was offered to him. Frog put the doubloons in his pocket and shook his pants leg to make them jingle.
"Just wanted to make sure I ain't dreaming," he said. "Me and Bonzo's got a little chore to do, Mr. McIvey. Where you want us to meet after you get done in the store?"
"Right here, I guess. Then we'll go back out of town and make camp. We all got some talking to do." Emma, Zek, and Skillet followed Tobias into the building. A clerk came to them immediately and said,
"Yes, sir, what can I do for you today?"
Tobias said, "Well, we want a bunch of things. Boots for everyone, and dresses for my wife, Emma. That'll do for a start."
"I'm sorry, sir, we don't carry ladies' apparel. There's just no call for it here. For that, you'll have to go up to Fort Myers, but we do have boots."
"Oh, hell," Tobias said, disappointed.
"You ought to get in some stuff for women. If you ain't got dresses, I guess you'd best see the Skillet first. He needs the most.
Which one is Skillet?
Him, Tobias said, pointing. This here's my boy, Zek. The clerk studied Skillet carefully, and then he said, He's really a whopper. What you got in mind?
Everything. Boots, socks, breeches, shirt, underwear. The whole works, and a felt hat, too.
Skillet beamed. You mean I get all that, Mr. Tobias? I was only expecting breeches.
That and anything else you want.
The clerk said, As I said, he's awful big. I hope we have his size and everything. I'll do my best. Why don't you folks just look around while I take care of him?
Skillet followed the clerk as Tobias said to Emma, I'm sorry, real sorry. I wanted to get you some dresses.
Doesn't matter, Emma said, trying to ease his disappointment. Maybe they've got a pair of boys' boots that'll fit me. That would do me fine on trail drives, and I don't need new dresses in the hammock.
Maybe they've got something else you want. Look around and see.
The three of them wandered around the aisles until Skillet and the clerk returned from the back of the store. Skillet was dressed in brown leather boots, blue denim pants, blue chambray shirt, and wide-brimmed black hat. The pants came 4 inches up the boots. Emma said, My, my, Skillet, you sure look nice.
Skillet grinned broadly. Don't hardly know myself in all this. It's the first stowboat stuff I ever owned. And it don't matter none about the breeches being short. I can tuck 'em in the boots and never know the difference.
Then he looked at Tobias.
Can I have this, too? It's only 10 cents.
In his hand, he held a red bandana.
Sure you can. Put it on and let's see how it looks.
Skillet put the bandana around his neck and tied it in front.
Always did want one of these things, he said. Foreman on the plantation at Tallahassee wore one.
It looks real nice with the blue, Emma said.
Now let's get the other boots, Tobias said. Skillet's done put us all to shame.
Skillet grinned again. Then he went over to a mirror hanging on one wall. Don't forget the apples, Papa, Zek said anxiously.
Don't you worry about that, I won't forget. We'll get a whole sack full before we leave. And you need breeches, too, and a hat if he's got one your size.
I'd like a hat, too, Emma said. It might not look right on a woman, but it would sure keep the sun off me out on the prairie.
After everyone had been outfitted, Tobias motioned for the clerk to follow him to the back of the store. He whispered,
You, by any chance, got a cook stove?
Just so happens I have,
the clerk answered, whispering also, but not knowing why.
Follow me.
They went into a storeroom. The clerk said,
We've had this thing for over a year, and nobody's bought it. It's a mite fancy for folks here. Came down by ship from New Orleans. You want it, you can have it for cost plus a shipping charge.
Sitting in one corner was a dust-covered cast-iron stove. The left bottom section was an oven, and the right side was the firebox. The flat surface on top of this contained 4 round cooking plates. 2 warmer ovens formed a top over the entire stove, and the door of each oven was decorated with golden angels playing harps. All 4 legs were shaped like clusters of grapes and were also painted gold. A unicorn was engraved across the main oven door and was charging a cringing devil on the firebox door. Both were gold-painted and outlined in blue. Tobias gulped. Not believing he had finally found such an item, he said, It's the prettiest thing I ever seen. How much is it?
I can let you have it for $36 plus the $12 shipping cost.
Sold, Tobias said quickly. I'll pay you for it now, but I don't want to pick it up till in the morning. Can you have somebody clean the dust off it?
Surely, the clerk said, breathing a sigh of relief. You've made a wise decision, Mr. McIvy. This should make your missus real proud. It's a mighty fine stove. When you total up the bill, don't say nothing about it in front of Emma. I want it to be a surprise, and when we get back up there, sack up a dozen apples for Zek. Be glad to, and they're on the house. You've been a good customer, and we hope you'll come back every time you're in Punta Raza.
Thanks, I appreciate it. That's right nice of you.
Emma selected 2 baking pans and a long kitchen knife, and when everything was paid for, they all went back out to the wagon. Everyone, including Emma and Zek, wore a new wide-brimmed black felt hat. Zek took an apple from the sack and put it in front of Ishmael's nose. The horse sniffed, then he grabbed the apple with his teeth and chomped vigorously. After swallowing, he jerked his head up and down, whinnying loudly. Zek said, Good, ain't it? Then he put another apple into Ishmael's mouth. The horse ate
6. Zek put the rest in the wagon and leaped onto the saddle. He streaked down to the dock at full gallop, turned abruptly, then raced back to the store and made the horse rear up, kicking its front legs high into the air as if fighting. Captain Hendry was standing on the store porch watching. He came to Tobias and said, "That your boy?" "Sure is. His name's Zechariah, but we call him Zek." "How old is he?" "Going on 11. Hendry leaned against the wagon. "He rides that horse like a tick on a hound's back. He must have been born in a saddle." "He does right well," Tobias said, pleased by the compliment. "Where'd you get that little horse? He's right swift." "Indians gave him to us. His name's Ishmael." "Ishmael? That's a queer name for a horse. You want to race him?" "Do what?" Tobias said, surprised. "Race him. That's my one weakness, a good horse race. I've got a Tennessee bay I'd like to put against him. Just to make it interesting, I'll bet the deed to 150 acres just up the river. You can put up 7 of those doubloons, I paid you. That's good odds, about the same as 7 cows against 150 acres of land. What say? Is it a bet?" Tobias was still too surprised by the challenge to answer. He scratched his head, trying to think clearly, and then he finally said, "Well, I don't know, Captain Hendry. I've never done nothing like that. Let's see what your horse looks like." Hendry turned to a man sitting on the porch and said, "Go to the stable and tell Willie to saddle Thunder and bring him out here." "Yes, sir, Captain Hendry, right away." Tobias said, "While he's getting the horse, I'll speak to my family. I still ain't sure this is the right thing to do." "Don't do it if you don't want to," Hendry replied. "I never push a man into anything. It's up to you." Tobias went back to the wagon and said hesitantly, "I don't exactly know how to explain this, but Captain Hendry wants to race a horse against Ishmael. The bet is 7 doubloons against 150 acres of land just up the river. I said I'd talk it over before I give an answer."
"Let's do it, Papa," Zek said eagerly. "Can't no horse outrun Ishmael?"
"Maybe yes and maybe no," Tobias said. "You ain't never been in a horse race. It's a heap different from running down cows."
"What kind of horse he got?"
Skillet asked. "A Tennessee bay name of Thunder. He's having it brought out here now."
"How long is the race?"
Skillet then asked. "He ain't made no mention of that yet." Just then a man came around the side of the store, leading a red stallion twice the size of Ishmael. Skillet said,
"Lord of mercy, Mr. Tobias, look at that. You could set a cow on top of him."
Tobias stared, and then he said,
"Ain't no way. We can't race Ishmael against an elephant like that. He wouldn't have a chance."
"Yes, he would, Papa," Zek insisted. "Size don't mean nothing. Ishmael ain't afraid of him. I can feel it."
Skillet said in a low voice, not wanting anyone standing nearby to hear,
"Mr. Tobias, I've seen men up in Tallahassee race horses just like that one. They go like the wind for a mile. Then they tuck her out. Zek can ride Ishmael flat out for 5 miles on the prairie. I seen it. When he turned 3 miles, Ishmael just getting warmed up. Tell Captain Hendry it's a 3-mile race or nothing. Zek make that big horse look like a fool."
"You really think so?"
"I done seen what that little horse can do. He got more heart than any critter I ever knowed."
Emma was listening, but remained silent. Tobias turned to her and said, "What you think, Emma?
It's gambling, and maybe it's wrong.
But it's no more than 7 cows against the land. And the gators ate more of them than that on the way here. And I know Zek would enjoy the race."
"We've been gambling just to get here," Emma replied. "Go on and do it if you want to. I don't think the Lord will frown on us for a horse race. Not if we look on it as fun for Zek and don't make a habit of it."
"Thanks, Mama," Zek smiled. "I knew you'd let me do it."
"All right, all right," Tobias exclaimed, wanting Zek to calm himself. "We'll do it, but just this once. And don't fret none if you take a whoopin' from that bay." Hendry called over to him, "What about it, McIvey? Is it a race or not?" Tobias went over to the porch and said, "How far you want to race, Captain Hendry?"
"Well, it's usually a mile, but I don't care. Whatever you say is fine with me."
3 miles, Tobias said.
3 miles it is, Hendry agreed. "It's about a mile and a half to the last holding pen outside town. The race will be to there and back."
One of the nearest spectators shouted, "Horse race! Horse race!" As soon as he said it, men poured from the saloon and seemingly out of trees, forming a chattering crowd in front of the store. One man waved his arms and shouted, "I'll take Thunder and give odds 3-1. Who wants to bet on a little horse?" There were no takers. "All right, then, 5-1.